over his life, and portrayed the scenes of his youth and their meaning in youth. First, we shall hear a new verse drama by the Canadian poet A.W. Purdy. Mr. Purdy, who now lives in Vancouver, was raised in Ontario, and he has done what every poet must do at some time or other in his life. He has come to grips with his childhood. For most of us, this would be perhaps a mere exercise in nostalgia. In the hands of a good writer, it's much more. The world at large reflected in one small pocket of interpretation. We're proud to present this script, for we sincerely believe it is one of the major accomplishments in North American writing to date. A Gathering of Days by A.W. Purdy. Sluggish veins come from the rural provinces of arms and legs, the deserted manner of the appendix. Come into the lit central hall of the brain.
Oh, so full of commands and brimful of loud noises. Am I a burglar then, a foul intruder despoiling your body of sleep? Am I there?
What the hell do I know? I can't see you. Come out into the light. If you don't come, I swear I'll wake up. And then where'll you be?
That's a gentle boy. A silent boy. A stare at drifting clouds, a collector of colors, an observer of birds. And now, alas, he resorts to violent words and tones. The antithesis of a stammering tongue.
How did you know I stammered? All right, then. Please come out where I can see you. Whether a ghost, a man, flesh, or familiar, whatever, I beg you, materialize. But you're a child. A boy with a man's voice.
And how you hate children. Don't stare at me.
I can't help staring. Lace collar, green sandals, bare knees, and jacket of passionate plum shade. If there ever was such a boy. Why, you're antique.
And you are a sesquipedalian idiot.
That's quite enough. I'm not equal to such language. Let's be friends. We seem to be stuck with each other.
That is correct. At least so long as you read proof. And there are 2,200 pages or so in the collected edition.
I think I begin to see. Your memory of things past, brought on by proof.
And Bill Pickles for supper last night. Very unwise, I must say.
What do you intend to do?
Don't be silly. I can't do anything without your consent. Get it through your thick head that I'm part of you. A figment of your imagination, if you like. A dream shape, a Freudian nightmare. Aladdin's genie smoking out of a bottle. But still, I am a word said, a deed done, and all of them yours.
Then go away and let me sleep. I'm tired.
That's irrelevant. You summoned me for a purpose, and we shall go far back in the past tonight.
Between you and Bruce, I'll never get any sleep. Good thing I didn't read Dante's Inferno and eat garlic sausage.
Far back in the past. We're going back to youth. Your youth again. To an infinitely small world that you have kept fresh and green with occasional bad poems and adolescent essays. You are fortunate in your guide. I am peculiarly qualified for such expeditions into the past. To know the town?
You should.
Here you rehearsed your stupidity, saw wonders and did not marvel, went to school and learned little. But there were days, I know, when you looked at a cloud, a marigold, a pond lily, and something stirred in you. These could never happen again. These were unique. And now you look at the rest of the world from their vantage. This frame of reference is responsible. Did you see truly?
How can I tell? My mind is hazed with happenings, trivialities. I forget what I did yesterday. Years are a chasm. You cannot ask me to bridge it.
You've done so already. Listen now.
I know that sound.
The old yard engine whistling at Dundas Street. I've often thought of it. Banging the couplings like castanets and whispering lullabies to the dead men in Evergreen Cemetery.
Look now. Who is the grimy little boy in short pants, smearing mud on his blouse and scowling at the sun? That red brick house with green veranda. Come inside and listen.
I'll never get used to cooking for two. I've had a dozen harvesters to cook for. Apple pickers smelling of sweat and teamsters in my clean kitchen. And now I cook for a small boy and a widow.
If you're feeling sorry for yourself, I'll hit you with my new purse. Genuine leather, too.
Well, marry again, if you like.
There's Mr. Hartwell. He's a widower, and I could put a bug in his ear.
Oh,
Bland, he's not that bad. He has money, a house, and a little boy to look after, too. I'm sure he wouldn't find it an unpleasant thought.
But I would. Besides, it's too soon anyway.
Have it your own way, then. Are we going shopping this afternoon? I saw some nice broadcloth at Gittleman's, and the butcher says Gittleman's going broke because he's a fool and a silly fool.
You see, the time changes little after all. The butcher, the weather, the preacher's sermon, and time looks you straight in the eye and says, go. And you can't stand still. Here's Jimmy with the caution box. Once upon a time, they were great good friends. The tough town urchin and the timid introvert.
I was not an introvert.
Oh, weren't you? But you had thought you did not believe. You felt. You knew. And the reel unwound so slowly an hour was forever.
How old was I then?
You were at the age of discovery. Columbus, Leeuwenhoek, Darwin, and Cortez all in one. Watch now. You've picked up a queer pebble. A non red stone.
But what was I thinking?
You weren't. You were knowing. The pebble is placed in your mind, and you feel it there. A new thing to number among your friends. You discovered a shining, a redness, a color, and these will never leave.
You're confusing me. Is Jimmy a different person or one and the same as I? For the sake of clarity and sanity,
you're going to McLean, the pump maker across the road. That tin-covered building with dirty windows. Do you like the smell of wood and flying shavings from turning the roof?
Get out of here, you kids! How can a man work with you standing in the door? Disturbing the busy noise with your beaming silence? Destroying the importance of sound with none at all? And on heaven I say, get out of here! But wait now. What pretty pumps you'd make. I could get a good price from a farmer I know. Water gushing from mouths. And arms for handles.
They run like rabbits too scared to speak.
McLean is a sour man and an old bachelor. Intolerant, too. A
go and visit your grandfather.
That old pirate with the yellow mustache?
He took me fishing once.
I broke my back rowing his great gassy carcass upstream to the dam, and thinking all the time he'd drown his boat. But I loved the old man.
No. He was legally born and duly registered in Woolworth.
I can't imagine that old bully of the logging camp, yellow walrus tusk, being born ever. He's like a swear word from the old Stone Age. And some people always pretend that they couldn't hear.
What, your own name?
Oh,
he comes to see the old man.
Yes, that's
him.
Want to look at the shotgun, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Here, boy. Lift it steady. When you don't shiver and shoot, we'll go hunting for partridge in the muddy hills, eh, boy? Hunting? What do you think of that?
I like it.
If I don't turn up my toes first, I ain't as good as I was, but feel that arm.
Ooh!
I can still put down a younker flat in his back, like once when I was bully of the logging camp. Cork boots in the face and yell when you've had enough. Did I ever tell you about the time I shot a mouse with that gun back in the woods?
He has, at least 6 times.
Years ago it was, when I lived in my backwoods cabin, caretaking for the Gilmore Lumber Company. I went to bed one night, and what do you think I see? It was a mouse lifting over a bowl of applesauce. On the table, quiet like. I reached for the gun. I raised up in bed. You listening, boy? Yeah, I guess you are. I steadied myself in the footrail. I aimed and paddled. Chimney pipes fell down, soot all over the floor, broke the dishes in the cupboard. Took me an hour to clean up the mess.
But what about the mouse?
Blow his head off slick as a whistle and never touch the bowl of applesauce at all. 50 years ago, and I could do it again, I could. Hey, boy, your mother know you come and listen to Grandpa tell you wicked things? She still keep her floors and tables clean, doormat at door, and cookies in the pantry. The old man ain't wanted there no more. Go home, boy.
He lived in snow 10 miles deep, and it never stopped snowing till the last day of spring. Mountains grew on the roadsides every night. Icicles sprouted like tenpenny nails from second-story windows, hung from eaves like silver spikes. It seemed the house roof shifted. It might blow off and vanish in the banshee wind without the icicle nails, and the attic rear away to the wild North Pole with a brass-bound chest full of love letters and an empty birdcage and broken wardrobe that once was Indian. Remember the boy who lived in the junkyard 2 blocks away? His curved, Semitic nose, hypnotic voice. What was his name? Isaac? Jethro? Or anyone?
Who was
him?
Like a snake in the grass, following my trail with one feather waving over its head and the hot sun blazing down.
What did you do?
I circled around behind him with a knife in my hand. I made no noise at all, and I picked up a stone and threw it beside him. When he jumped, I slipped my knife into his throat and got blood all over my best short pants.
I don't believe it.
I got back to my horse and warned the soldiers. We burnt the village down that very night and killed every one of them. You see this scar? An Iroquois wounded me there, and I had to stay in Indian country all that winter.
I thought it was summer.
This was another time in the Rocky Mountains, and I never told anybody at all till now.
Thank you.
cows on the first day of snow. In the early market day morning, they sang in the near-sounding acoustic, penetrating bedclothes and breaking on steep snow canyons, receding and echoing over the wrapped warm town like an infringement of heaven's patent. Small boys stirred under patchwork quilts, scrubbed frost from windows, and peered into the musical streets. On the 3-foot armor of frozen river, rinks were cleared with homemade snow shovels. At noon, they flowed and overflowed with sticks and boys and skates and shouts and warmer weather. You were there, too, or rather, Jimmy was there, standing with freckled nose and mittened fingers, watching the jingling teams unload and go back. This never happened before that day, and never would happen again. Proteus growling beneath the ice like a chained monster and cracking enormous knuckles at schools of sleeping fish. Poseidon galloping frantically on the underside of the mirror. Gods imaginary and gods concrete in heavy coats and spitting brown tobacco.
Hey, let's go out on the bay.
Where they get the ice?
Yeah.
Okay, let's.
Hey, maybe we can get a ride out.
Yeah.
Hey, mister, can we ride back
out
with you?
Huh? Sure. Get up and undo this wool blanket there.
Okay.
Your mothers won't mind, will they?
No.
Okay. Hold on.
The bright sun and keen wind and long track out. The silver bridge across the wide, wide river.
En roulant, ma boule roulant. En roulant, ma boule. Derrière chez nous, y a un étang. En roulant, ma boule. Trois beaux canards sont montaignants.
Far out in Bay of Quinte country, near the beehive fishing shanties and blue, blue sky, men in black oilskins and using long silver saws, dismembering the inert corpse of Quinte, cutting into the unknowable, and loading the crystal elements of ice onto sleighs and sending it off to market. And the black water lapped hungrily at her. No water in the world so black, so loved by ice.
When is the fish that caught in the ice and can't get out?
They're all asleep down there on the bottom, waiting for spring to come again.
But how do they know it's spring?
Well, I don't know. Maybe some of them sleep all winter and summer. Maybe they never wake up.
Maybe they don't.
Let's go over and look at the fishing shanties. They're pretty close over there.
All right, let's. I think somebody's alive inside them.
Let's bang on this one and find out.
Well, he wouldn't like that.
Who wouldn't?
Whoever's inside might be sleeping.
Yeah. I tell you what. Let's go up and throw snowballs.
Yeah. Here's lots of soft snow.
It makes it good and hard.
Yeah, okay.
Both together?
Okay.
Get the hell out of here, you
bitch,
before I cut you up for a
bacon
feed
to
the fish.
How's the
rest
getting
on? Early morning, and the heavy, molten sun is pouring redly over the horizon. The streets are quiet, with milk wagons 2 blocks away moving and stopping according to custom. Subdued starlings are chattering, and the boy shuts the screen door softly and crosses the road to the river.
He has a dog. I remember Gip, Airedale Spaniel, pure pedigreed mongrel. And how he loved to chase chickens.
Yeah, Gip.
Over to Bronson's dock with the morning mist man deep on the still river. Bridge lights burning, and boy peering into the water for no reason. Soiled with clear ghosts and sewage, the green dimension. How steep is the river? Has it tall mountains, chasms, and precipices underwater? Wouldn't it be fun to walk down there, exploring the bottom, watch the silvery schools arrowing away on piscatorial errands, Roman-nosed circles of green moss on their backs, and paddling up to watch the fantastic cloud-filled world above? There now, street lights are out, and the Model A ambles over the dusty road. A whistle shreds the mist, and time begins again.
Yes, Mother, I'm coming.
Lunch. And how that woman manages with 7 children and not one of them over 8 years old, I can't speak.
You could stand and watch the bug climb a sandhill with night a million years away and morning an AM
past.
You could make everything stop.
Anything left on the side, lovely boiled.
But the little green bug on his hand. fell flat on his thorax, or whatever bugs fall. A piece of wood might help. Push him over onto the wood. Now you get that. Hurry on, up the sand pile, and down into the further side.
Cut it. You always say how fond you are of boiled cabbage.
Well, anyway, quite suddenly, the sun jumped 14 miles over the post office clock. Perfect bloom of womanhood and loveliness. A solitary daisy on the brown meadow of life.
Would you like a cup of tea? I make lovely tea.
Oh, Mrs. Ross, I've devoted my time to your situation. To be left alone with a child is a big responsibility, I may say, a tremendous responsibility. And since my own dear wife has gone to a better land, I will admit the thought of marriage has entered my mind, despite the respect I have for the dear departed. And in our business dealings, I may say, you have grown very dear.
Oh,
very dear, I repeat. What could be closer to God's heart than a union between two of his bereaved children? A merger, so to speak, of heart and business. You will know the dream which takes place.
I'm overwhelmed, Mr. Hartwell. Truly overwhelmed.
I am aware of the effect of my words on one comparatively sheltered by pastoral countryside. But I urge you to consider our children. Jimmy, Paul, Chester, motherless, almost orphan. Love would come eventually, I'm sure. The boys would grow to be brothers in work and play. Oh, I am a rough businessman without soft words, Mrs. Ross, and profoundly awkward in such matters. But this does seem a merger favored by God.
Please, can I make you
think
you really very good?
My dear lady, this is not the time for tea. I offer you my hand in marriage. I offer you security for Jimmy. A guiding hand at the helm. A sure voice in council. And to these advantages, I have the name of a good man. A church warden, respected by the townspeople, I may say, even admired. And in addition, I will name you the sole beneficiary of a $5,000 life insurance policy in the day of our marriage.
Please forgive me. I must think about this and see that, don't you?
Dear lady, of course. You must become used to me. Let me think gradually into your daydream, your thoughts, and eventually your heart. I am not a usurer. I demand no answer tonight, tomorrow, but only when God is safe harbor where you may be. Then, now I must go. Work too, man's work is never done, you know. Never. I just hope to see you on the Sabbath.
Yes, I'll see you in church. I mean now.
I understand. You are overwhelmed, as well you may be. A good man is hard to come by. And now, good evening.
Good night, Mr. Hartwell.
And a beautiful night, too.
Dundas 241. Emma? Oh, you fool. You fool.
And no strong drink or profane language cross the lips of McKinnon.
In the summer sun, black marble shone and sparkled. Mrs. Moriarty remarked that it gave the neighborhood an air.
Not like that pickle factory seat.
Steinbeck, the butcher, hands on bloody apron, once said,
I sure admire McKinnon's work. He's an artist, and death must bow the head before him.
And McKinnon pushed back the steel-rimmed spectacles on his forehead, strapped his goggles resolutely, and entered the sandblast room to do battle with elemental stone, carving the human span of existence on eternity with pitiful tiny letters.
David Reed, born 1864, died 1922.
And the white-winged angel, imported from Italy, looked through the stone membrane of closed eyes. Granite relics of the Paleozoic regarded man's frivolity somberly. Antediluvian marble stood steadfast in rain with sent toy bolts skimming up down the gutter. Sunday afternoon. Stone regarded stone indifferently. A kitten played cat and mouse with a dead leaf, leaping, pouncing, swatting, having the air for element as much as earth. The boy watched, absorbed. The kitten swerved where a white stone marker leaned knee high. A hand, a foot, a thought, a wish combined. The stone fell on the kitten and broke its neck with a sound like one of many twigs snapping on a windy night in moon-watched woods. Pirouette and curve on air once more for the last time, and close green eyes forever. The scrap of fur writhed. And here was horror. Here was death. The Last Supper, the crucifixion narrowed down to a moment of fire and ice. Here was strange beauty on a Sunday afternoon. Boy and kitten frozen forever in time. It must have been an accident.
I don't know.
Stone guardians closed in.
Murderer.
One said.
Murderer.
They all said, but nobody moved. Wind listened, the carved angel watched through painfully opened eyes and waited. Waited.
Justice.
Snapped Carrara Marble.
Justice. Counsel for the defense.
Said a nameless headstone.
Prosecuting attorney.
Roared the wakened wind.
Verdict and sentence.
Storm blustering granite.
Guilty. Guilty. So say we all. Guilty as charged. All on him.
But the boy ran weeping home. And the sun wiped his eye on cloud cambric and said,
"This is only a small murder. Let him go. Boys will be boys."
And the tombstone nodded gravely.
So they will.
Get back your faces. Places, everyone. Places. Here comes the appearance to pray for the palace. The town, the time, the men, women, and children. It could be even now.
No, it couldn't. They're gone, and nothing will ever bring them back.
7 giant steps into the past. 4 short steps sideways, and 1 dwarf step into your mind. The clock strikes. 1, 2, 3.
4, 5, 6, 7.
Pentagrams chalked on the streets and 5-year-old witches chanting together.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Upstarts, diagrams in blood, and Jimmy Loves Marion carved on a wooden wall. Covens and cantrips, alembics and alchemists, and darkly brooding in his father's junkyard way off at the end of Division Street, the stable bar sinister of Izzy Greenbaum. 7 giants.
Goosey-goosey-dander, where do you wander? Upstairs, downstairs, and in my lady's chamber. 9 o'clock is striking. Mother, may I go out?
All the boys are waiting. They want to take me out.
They want to give me an apple. They want to give me a kiss. They want to give me a kiss. I'd rather wash the dishes. I'd rather scrub the floor. I'd rather take the boat to the toilet.
Behind and hidden under television sets, echoing behind a radio loudspeaker, and dying silently in the cinemascope screen with stereophonic sound. But now they're alive.
Run, Pete, run! Run, Pete, run! Going
Maybe, but I want to see what you look like first.
Don't be afraid.
seven giant steps and back to the screen for Amber and Tombstone. Carry on, boys. All together this time.
It lasts as long as snowflakes, opening buds, rain falling in a marigolded pasture. But wonder diminishes, glory dies, and boys grow men with big thumbprint of a dream, for the god shadow of a wish once said, to see through the eyes of childhood before sight was poisoned by sleep.
Nobody remembers but me. That world exists nowhere but in my mind.
And not completely even there. Come along and see Mrs. Moriarty on Dundas Street. The Irish girl grown stout, soft tongue sharp, and slim fingers blunt as wooden peg.
I remember. She was always singing something.
She's only a bird in a gilded cage, a beautiful sight
to see. And Mr. Moriarty, what did he say? He sang,
there is a tavern in the town, and there my true love shatters down, and then I'll hang mine.
That was the night Moriarty's barn burned down, and he's never been sober since. Red sparks singing into the sky, and the town asleep in its foot. Quietly the fire says, and nobody will know. Softly the fire says, and nobody will hear. Only an old man crying in the night.
Behold!
chestnut bay and brown gelding was coming. All of them were in the Moriarty went into the house.
Give me a drink, Mother. I'm very thirsty.
Occupied with adding market poundage. Chickens busy pecking at buffet suppers. And Rex, the elderly shepherd dog, surveying his green kingdom like.
Hello, boy.
Who are you?
I'm Marion. Do you want to see the bull? He's got a big ring in his nose and he looks like Mr. Goldfish.
Who's that?
The hired man. He's got a big silver watch with a long, long chain. He's got a book over there with real Christ. Pa caught some.
I want to see the bull.
Well, I don't know. He's not very friendly. But I guess it's all right. Don't go too near. Look at him.
He looks mad. And his eyes are red.
Have you seen people? We don't let him.
Bite my toe if I put in my foot.
Silly. They eat worms and flies and weeds and things. Not people. Well, at least I don't think they do. I've gone wading and they tickle your toes a little. But they didn't bite.
Let's go in swimming.
Oh, we couldn't do that.
Why couldn't we? It's early. Long time yet till supper.
Because I'm a girl, that's why.
I don't...
Mama says girls don't let boys see them.
Oh?
But if you'll promise not to look...
I won't look.
Did the changeling geese wander over the hill to his disapproval? The face voice full advanced threateningly, ewes skimming the grass. The chestnut statuary of horses released a mouthful of clover and canter over to watch and flicker their longing for coomer. Nobody came.
Don't splash!
Being a motorboat.
Boys throw stones. I don't like boys.
Aw, they're not so bad.
I knew a girl looked just like a boy. She wore pants like you.
Do I look like a boy?
Your hair's too long.
Besides, I didn't like her.
Hey, don't splash.
I'm being a motorboat, too.
Stealthy, the willows whisper, spreading long leaves and silvery wind-spun curtains. Water confided its soluble words to the listening wind. The sun moved off to search for castles in Spain with crumbling towers. Bell rang the bronze changes of an afternoon that dwindled, a day that was.
John, I won't have it. I simply won't have it. They've got to go home this minute. My little girl. She never had a bad thought till our boy came and put them into her head. Right. You get out of the car. What do you think they were doing?
What were they?
Examining each other. That's what they were doing.
What do you mean?
That's to make you say it, can't you guess?
Well, I prefer not to guess. Spit it out plain like.
Oh, this is stupid. Women don't talk about things like this, and besides, you know.
Maybe I do. It don't seem so bad to me. Boys are curious critters. Girls are, too.
John Rogers, if you don't get that little devil child away from here, I'll...
The shotgun wandered to empty house over Plank Ridge into the cricket's bank. The old man tugged a 6-foot door from the grass, boot blown from forgotten moorings, and two black snakes glided away into the moon drenched summer.
Well, boy, we better leave our lunch at the house and get out in them apple trees. Your ma wants results.
Into the bloom-flooded orchard, the pink-toothed flowers of cherry, russet, mackintosh, pie, and Jonathan. Under the purple barricades of the Murray Hill, Suddenly, the huge old man stopped, and 12 gauge thunder manhandled the priesthood tree. It seemed the crows died with a burst of black feathers in a falling sky of pink blossoms and dead crows. Then back to life. But something happened on the way.
My house! I made it! Now it's gone!
Mourning over the broken boards of a playhouse. A possession built on Saturn and then forgotten. Why should he not fly in a rage and kill his son? Whoever governs the destiny of toys and men.
I tell you what, I'll build you another house, high as the sky and old as the world.
Once more, an earlier time in bright buckwheat acres, the sun-smitten fields and brown summer fallow where memory laid its deep foundation. And the white beating wind of March came by, huffed and puffed and blew the barn down. The boy wandered into tall grass of rabbit country.
Don't go too far, Jimmy.
Caught green frogs and watched the tremulous pulse of panic quiver under a mottled waistcoat. Built his playhouse from weathered boards of a flattened, stepped-on barn. At half past milking time, when sun harrowed the fields golden, went back to eat sandwiches and drink milk, peering at the two faceless men unharnessing horses, preparing for home and hot supper. The frogs in Black Pond tuned fiddles tentatively. A hawk killed a mouse that squeaked and died. Bird calls peopled the early firefly evening. The sly three-cornered face of a fox detached itself from woods and came to sniff at empty handles regretfully, like the lean red cassie of the dust. Presently, the boy slept. We have no record of dreams, except that day preserved its magic, as others preserved theirs. Wherever the dragonfly shed wings, the moment paused, screamed, and time plunged forward again, while the world grew older and older.
How much further will we go? In what direction? And when will it end?
Very soon now it will end. And you, like other men, go where you must go, until that engine which is your body wears away, not ever having discovered a purpose.
But now I can never stay long anywhere. Having seen these people, I must run after them, catch their sleeves and say, do you remember me?
They will not remember.
But someone must have seen the things I've seen and done the things I've done.
What did you do, after all?
I lived greatly. The world was a new thing for me to know, built overnight and fashioned in bright colors to please a boy.
And having seen again that world behind the years, you imagine it still exists somewhere. Flags waving, bands playing, the mayor wearing a green waistcoat on town hall steps, waiting to present you with the keys of the city.
You make it seem comic. But no, I don't expect to find that place. None so wonderful now. But I shall go on looking for something else. McLean, Moriarty, McKinnon, and the rest must stay in their alcove. Will you come with me?
I must stay with them.
The dust will cover your body, my small anachronism, and buildings multiply between. Your face will blur, and I shall forget. Why can't you come?
You will find others to go with you and seek whatever it is you seek. Others with agreeable memories. And they too will seem dear for a while, and they too will fade. Stones on the beach, sea water in green bottles that reflect the light as we go to time. And memories like bodies will change.
Wait. Wait. Wait.
You have just heard the first performance of A Gathering of the Slade by Billy Richards. Ross, later in life, was William Needles, and the voice of his memory was Hugh Webster. Also heard in the cast were Catherine Blake, Marcia Clare, Jean Caval, Brendan Dillon, Joe Fowler, Alice Hill, Paul Kligman, Peggy Loader, Ed McNamara, Alex McKee, Claire Murray, Frank Petty, David Schneiderman, Larry Solway, Charles Telling, Murray Westgate, and Austin Willis. The guitar player was Stan Wilson. Technical operation was by Peter Lacombe, and sound effects by David Tasker and Harold Stein. And now, having heard how memory can work upon the mind of a poet, let's transfer our attention to the reactions of a composer. Friedrich Smetana, the 19th century Czech composer, shared with Beethoven the tragedy of going deaf. And at the end of his life, he wrote two...